Epilogue. Two Paths to Harvard. And now, with all these pages behind us, an early promise has been confirmed. This book indeed has no unifying theme. But if there is no unifying theme to the book, Freakonomics, there is at least a common thread running through the everyday application of Freakonomics. It has to do with thinking sensibly about how people behave in the real world. All it requires is a novel way of looking, of discerning, of measuring. This isn't necessarily a difficult task, nor does it require super sophisticated thinking. We have essentially tried to figure out what the typical gang member or sumo wrestler figured out on his own, although we had to do so in reverse. Will the ability to think such thoughts improve your life materially? Probably not. Perhaps you'll put up a sturdy gate around your swimming pool or push your real estate agent to work a little harder. But the net effect is likely to be more subtle than that. You might become more skeptical of the conventional wisdom. You may begin looking for hints as to how things aren't quite what they seem. Perhaps you'll even seek out some trove of data and sift through it, balancing your intelligence and your intuition to arrive at a glimmering new idea. Some of these ideas might make you uncomfortable, even unpopular. To claim that legalized abortion resulted in a massive drop in crime will inevitably lead to explosive moral reactions. But the fact of the matter is that Freakonomics-style thinking simply doesn't traffic in morality. As we suggested near the beginning of this recording, if morality represents an ideal world, then economics represents the actual world. The most likely result of having heard this recording is a simple one. You may find yourself asking a lot of questions. Many of them will lead to nothing, but some will produce answers that are interesting, even surprising. Consider the question posed a couple of chapters ago. How much do parents really matter? The data have by now made it clear that parents matter a great deal in some regards, most of which have been long determined by the time a child is born, and not at all in others. Those are the ones we obsess about. You can't blame parents for trying to do something, anything, to help their child succeed, even if it's something as irrelevant as giving him a high-end first name. But there is also a huge random effect that rains down on even the best parenting efforts. If you are in any way typical, you have known some intelligent and devoted parents whose child went badly off the rails. You may have also known of the opposite instance, where a child succeeds despite his parents' worst intentions and habits. Recall for a moment the two boys, one black and one white, described a couple chapters ago. The white boy, who grew up outside Chicago, had smart, solid, encouraging, loving parents who stressed education and family. The black boy from Daytona Beach was abandoned by his mother, was beaten by his father, and had become a full-fledged gangster by his teens. So what became of the two boys? The second child, now 27 years old, is Roland G. Fryer Jr., the Harvard economist studying black underachievement. The white child also made it to Harvard, but soon after, things went badly for him. His name is Ted Kaczynski.